everybody. Welcome to episode 166 of Rain Delay Radio, a baseball podcast. My name is Naim. I am going to be here with Frack to talk about the news of the week. Later on in this episode, I'm going to be talking to Pat about the new Phillies City Connect jerseys. And if you think I forgot my name, it's because I forgot we don't say last names on this show. So I was about to say my full name, which I'm happy to say it's Naim Siddiqui, but I was about to say my full name. And then I was like, wait, no, that's not this show. Anyway, Frack, how's it going?
I've had a miserable day. However, being with you so far made it better.
So, yeah, we planned to like pretty much start right away and then talk for, I think, 20 minutes before hitting record.
Yep.
So, you know, that's how it goes sometimes.
It's much needed.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the news of the week. Obviously the big news of the week is the Oakland A's news. We're going to talk about that at the end here, because Frack, as the resident A's fan, has quite a bit to talk about. Stay tuned for that. But first, let's talk about some of the quick hits. The first thing I want to talk about, Steven Strasburg announced his retirement from the Major League Baseball. He said, as a young kid, all I dreamt about was winning a World Series. Thanks to the many coaches, teammates, medical staff, my boyhood dream came true in 2019. I've come to realize how truly important and special that moment was for so many fans in the DMV. Your unwavering support through all the ups and downs will always mean the world to me. He also thanked Ted Lerner and said his family was and him were truly fortunate to experience this baseball jersey in the nation's capital. Kind of big, right? Because Strasburg still had like 3 or whatever years left on that deal or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's only not big because of the whole he kind of wanted to do this a while ago thing.
Sure.
You know, yeah. Where he planned last August to retire and then got held back basically from doing that. So I felt like in August it was a big deal. And now it's like, oh, yeah, that thing that I thought already happened just happened.
That's true. I forgot about that weird August situation of him saying, I'm going to retire, and then them saying, no, don't. And him being like, okay, I guess. Yeah. Which is, and then it's kind of weird to then come here at like the beginning of the season in like a season that's not bound to be very good for the Nationals.
Yeah.
But all right.
I feel like it had something to do with the ownership thing and might know someone who can give a slightly inside take into it. But I think that with the ownership change that didn't happen, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I know the league jumped in, because I think he said, I'm going to retire. The Nationals were like, oh, cool, we'll roll out the red carpet. And the league was like, no, sets a bad precedent. Don't do it. And now I don't know what the turnaround it was, because you'd think that retiring at the end of the season would have it be buried then in April. So it has to have something to do with the whole, we almost sold the team and then sold it back and gave Rizzo a mega extension to build another team from scratch, basically. So
yeah, it's interesting, because and they are reportedly still paying him for the contract. Mm-hmm. Which of course, like, why would you retire if you're owed $105 million and not get the $105 million you're owed? Uh-huh. But then it's also like, I'm sure, like, insurance instead of payroll or whatever. Like, I don't know exactly how the accounting works on that. Mm-hmm. Which might have been also why Major League Baseball stepped in the first place and all that stuff. So who knows? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess a strange end to a strange career.
Right. I was going to ask you, what is your number one strongest Steve Strasburg memory?
Him not pitching in 2012.
Really? Okay.
Well, cause I mean, I was also, cause the Nationals lost that series to the Cardinals. Right. So like, that was the big conversation, was like, they were shutting him down early to keep him for the rest of his career. And now in hindsight, should they have, they won a World Series ring in that time. So maybe it worked out, but mm-hmm. with all the injuries he had and the whole career, like everything, it's like, was it really worth shutting him down early in 2012? We'll never know. But, yeah, that was like the big deal was the Nationals, you know, won 100 games or whatever. I think they won at least 98 games, but they won the most mm-hmm. games in the National League, and they lost the NLDS to the wild card Cardinals, who, Dylan, plug your ears, reached on the reached because of the wild card game against the Braves with the infield fly, and then beat the Nationals with the Daniel Descalso, Pete Cosmo. Like, it was, that felt like a team of destiny for the Cardinals, and a bunch of it was because of the Nationals shutting down Strasburg. So that's my, like, and that's also right as I was really, really getting into baseball. I already liked mm-hmm. baseball, but that was like when I kind of like became a baseball fan instead of like just yeah. I like the Cardinals. So yeah. that's one of the most vivid memories to me is yeah, the whole like controversy around them shutting Strasburg down completely, not even like using him as a reliever in the playoffs. No. Like it was. And what, I honestly think that has ramifications across baseball now. I think a lot fewer teams mm-hmm. are doing that kind of thing because they're like, well, it didn't really work for the Nats in 2012.
Yeah. And it's funny how we still haven't, as we'll get to later in the news, it's funny how we still haven't figured this pitching thing out.
Yeah. Well,
exactly. Yeah. And I think that the solution may be more simple than we think, but at the same time, you're right. Like you said earlier, we are a couple of weird bounces in the 2019 World Series away from labeling what they did in 2012 as the failure of a dynasty.
Yeah, you know, like, absolutely. And in many ways it already is, you know, like that team maybe should have won a couple of rings instead of just one, but at least they got their ring. But you're absolutely right. They were very close to not getting that ring.
Mm-hmm. And baseball yeah. doesn't have dynasties in this era, really. Not necessarily back to back, at least.
Yeah, if you're talking about Strasburg's career, right? There's like three Giants rings in that career. There's three Red Sox rings in that career. I think there's two or three. How many rings do the Astros have now? Two or three?
Two for Houston, two for Boston, three for San Francisco.
Sure. Yeah. So like that you can call right. those mm-hmm. dynasties. Because Strasburg came into the league in 2010. But yeah, so you can call like mm-hmm. as far as MLB dynasties go, I think those are dynasties. Whereas the Nats with one ring and like a handful of playoff appearances doesn't really feel like a dynasty in any way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I guess it's weird. Maybe, you know, in 10 years we're gonna think about it differently with like the Dodgers, who have a bunch of World Series appearances but not a bunch of rings, mm-hmm. you know, or like yep. there's, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know how I'll think about it in the future, but if we're looking at mm-hmm. just the career of Strasburg 2010 to present, there are multiple mm-hmm. teams with multiple rings in there, so it's yeah. tough to like mm-hmm. not, you know.
And that is my strongest memory, by the way, was his debut in 2010 against the Pirates. June 8th, 2010, I remember that game very strongly. I remember the hype around it. I remember it being on MLB Network, which was like getting a nationally televised Pirates-Nationals game in 2010 was weird in the first place.
Well, hold on. The Pirates were not a bad team in 2010. They were not a great team.
Right. I'd have to look up how they were in 2010. They weren't like the best, but just two franchises that have never really... that were there, and then all of a sudden
it was like a young future thing, right? Because it was Andrew McCutchen versus Steven Strasburg.
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just Strasburg, the hype before then, I mean, the golden spikes, the shooting through the minor leagues, and everyone's talking about him. So it was fun. That debut was fun, and I'll never forget it. And the rest of his career has been, because again, I don't have to live my life around the National League playoffs, so the other notorious thing doesn't stick out to me as much as, you know, when that super mega star gets on the mound for the first time,
right?
And you know, Skeens will do that. I think it would be really funny if it was against the Nationals in a game.
So. Pirates Nationals MLB Network game. Yeah.
Yep.
And again in a season where neither team is really good.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like June of this year.
Yeah. That would be pretty like, yeah, funny sort of full circle type thing. Yeah, I don't know. It's so tough with Steven Strasburg's career because like he is, you know, like the peak at his peak, he was an incredible pitcher, but like he was always dinged up, right? He never really won any individual awards, a couple of All-Stars, a Silver Slugger, weirdly enough, but no Cy Youngs. You know, he's just like a solidly good pitcher who the biggest thing around him was he can't stay on the mound, right? And like that's kind of his legacy at this point is his inability to stay healthy and you know I guess load management.
And being the first big start, one last thing I will say, the second strongest memory just popped into my head is in Atlanta at a Strasburg start in 2019, and he cranked a 3-run home run. And he milked that because the Nationals beat Atlanta like 15-1. I don't know, left early. It was just that bad of a blowout. And I don't think I've seen pitcher hit again. Like that was it. Live. Like it was just Strasburg's home run, and I've never seen that live again. So I think I could go a very long time in my life and say, last time I saw a pitcher hit was Steven Strasburg. And it's just going to make me sound 10 times older than I am.
Yeah. that's really funny. Well, speaking of pitchers hitting, as you pointed out so rightly, pitchers do not hit anymore, except in the very, very rare occasion, which I'm sure we're going to see. This Dylan actually asked about this, like when's like how long until the last time we ever see a pitcher hit? And I don't think it's ever going to happen because I think every so often a situation like this will happen where you just need a guy. Which in this case, Scott McGuff. McGuff, is that how it's pronounced? I assume it's McGuff. I've never actually heard his name pronounced. McGow, anyway. Scotty M for the Diamondbacks while playing against the Yankees batted with the bases loaded, two outs, struck out looking, and the Diamondbacks lost. It was an 11-inning game. This is in the 11th inning. So, you know, it's like a situation like that is bound to happen again, but this is the first time in years that we have seen a pitcher not named Shohei Ohtani actually take a plate appearance.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this is big.
This is big. Yeah. It's medium, right? But
you're right. I don't think it will ever not happen. I think it will just be a weird baseball quirk, which is fun.
It'll continue to be like few and far between, but like on the baseball subreddit, like it's listed as pitcher player batting. As a like, you know, not the position player pitching, but like that's where we're at now is like, is a pitcher batting is going to be an interesting like case. And I'm sure it's going to be a situation like this, right? Where like you get into extra innings, late innings, maybe like various, you know, other bench players have already been used for various things. You used all your defensive subs. All you've got left is your backup catcher and your starters. And you're like, all right, go out there and take a plate appearance, you know? Or similarly, like if the you know backup catcher is starting at catcher and the starting catcher is starting at DH and the backup catcher has to come out of the game, then suddenly the starting catcher has to come in and hit and you forfeit your DH. That's the way the DH rule works, unless they change that in the future, which I doubt they will.
I don't think they will. Yeah, pitchers
are hitting. You know, so like things like that are bound to happen every couple of years. So there's bound to be pitchers hitting every few years, but. The last time, you know, we saw regulars was 2021 or whatever.
And so, and you know, it brings the question with Ohtani in general, and he could be remembered as either the last guy who does this, the only guy who does this, the titanic figure of baseball history, or he inspires a generation of people to go do this. And we just
I'm sure there will be other two-way players, but that'll be like the exception, right? It'll be like the last non-two-way player pitcher to bat was Scott McGuff until the next non-two-way player pitcher to bat, you know?
Yeah. And what I am wondering here, Greinke hasn't formally retired, has he?
I don't think so.
Like, I would have heard about it, right?
Correct. Probably. Who knows, Zach Greinke, you know, he might have, you're right, because if he filed the paperwork, then we would have heard about it, but I could also buy Zach Greinke filing the paperwork and not telling anybody.
Like, leaving it anonymous or blank or whatever.
Yeah.
He has, because I remember he was always trying to get a hitting milestone before he retired. He has scored 49 runs, 600 plate appearances exactly, 117 hits, 29 doubles and 9 home runs. That's it. He wanted to hit 10 home runs before he retired.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was like one of his big 10 home runs and 10 steals. He has 9 steals. So really, he should come back for that steal, because I think, you know, with these new bases, you know, three-something-year-old man.
Because it's showing under standard batting, he is there in 2023. So I think he did come in as a pinch runner last year.
Yes. Something, I remember that. That sounds familiar.
Something along those lines. I don't know exactly what, but yeah, it is. I mean, I'm sure. I think he's still trying to like get a gig, but nobody has called him up. I'm seeing a Sports Illustrated article from February saying he does not retire yet. A Kings of Kauffman article from March. I wouldn't be surprised if some team who's not great hits the right number of injuries and is like, maybe we call up Zach Greinke to come pitch a little bit. That team has probably got to be the Royals, so it's got to be like the right Royal injuries happening. But I think
the right Royals injuries, or maybe the perfect storm of team that still thinks they're competitive and wants to be, has all those injuries and says, hey, he's proven, and they like, and he's like, yeah, sure, chance at a ring, whatever, and he jumps on a team in July.
I do not think any team is going to go with 40-year-old Zach Greinke over one of their own prospects.
Literally anyone like, else.
Yeah, you know, it's just like it's that feels like a tougher sell than a bad team being like, maybe we just got enough injuries, maybe we grab Zach Greinke and he sells a couple of tickets because he's Zach Greinke.
And then the
problem with the Royals is the Royals have five starters plus they have Jordan Lyles, so if one goes down, then Lyles automatically takes that spot. So they have to have like two or three guys go down before they start thinking maybe we call up Greinke.
Yeah, at least. And his I kind of like this, if this is true and we see him again and he quietly retires and tries to sign that blank retirement form, his debut against the A's, I think in the Coliseum, five innings, five hits, one strikeout, one walk. His last game versus the Yankees, five innings, four hits, two strikeouts, two walks. That's not bad.
He should go to Korea. Why not? Just go hang out in Korea for a year, you know?
He's probably good enough to be like not ace stuff in Korea. But
average to above average, yeah, for sure.
Above average, they probably go insane over him. Just depends on if he wants to move to Korea.
That's true. But it's just like, for a year, you know, like go hang out in Korea for a year. It seems like a fun enough thing to do. Like just why not? You know, it's the kind of thing. Oh, yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. It'll be fun to see him go do something like that. But
one last thing on Greinke here. If this is his last lineup that he ever faced, the New York Yankees on October 1st. This lineup is radioactive dumpster fire. It does not have Stanton. It does not have Judge. It does not have Soto. And we will associate those three dudes with the Yankees for a while. Instead, it was LeMahieu, Volpe, Wells, Higashioka, Kiner Falefa, Cabrera, Peraza, Pereira. Always get that guy's name wrong. And Floreal.
By the way, even if it did have Stanton, that would also kind of be radioactive dumpster fire at this point in his career.
Oh, 100%. He hit a grand slam today, though. You know, maybe he's back.
He's definitely not back, but we're at the point of Giancarlo Stanton's career where he's good for 20 to 30 home runs a year and a 200 batting average. Like, that's what he's going to do for you. And he's going to limp his way to 500 home runs. And we're going to all be like, yay, Giancarlo.
You know, like,
again, I think I mentioned this last week. He hit 400. He got 400 last year. And I think we barely, like, it was like a footnote on an episode last year. Like, it's just, you know, what a sad career. Anyway, moving on.
He's somehow irrelevant in Yankee Stadium.
I know, man. I know. We talked quite a bit about Soto last week, but like, boy, does that dude belong in pinstripes.
Yes. Yes, he will be there.
It's just
forever.
So right. Yeah. It's just like they've got it. They've got to re-sign him. I can't. Let's talk about a couple of injuries. Shane Bieber definitely getting Tommy John surgery, which is a bummer. I think they tried to like shut him down for a little bit and keep him healthy, and then bring him back with some rest. He had two solid starts, 12 innings pitched across two starts, no runs, one walk and 10 hits across those two starts. And then Tommy John.
So womp,
womp. Wah, wah, wah. Yeah. And yeah, last year it was elbow inflammation, and they tried to combat it with rest, and no, it is UCL in tear, full on Tommy John surgery. And I mean, you know, I think that, you know, the modern Tommy John has a bit of a quicker recovery time, so he might be back early next season.
But yeah, maybe in like June.
Maybe earlier, depending on, I don't know. I think they, you know, Tommy John has gotten better and better since, at least we started watching, obviously. So it could, but yeah, it's, I think he'll be back before the All-Star break next year. Yikes. It sucks. This really felt like his year to like come back, you know, like to like come back and be Shane Bieber again. But
I don't know what is his career after this? I don't really know.
This is his first Tommy John, right?
Right. But it just seems like with all the injuries and all the body of work, that's like, what's going on?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And yeah, he had a good 2022, you know, like it was a good, like it obviously wasn't like the Cy Young season, but it was a really good season. And then last year it was this injury, right? So it's like, it's tough. It's not like it's really two injuries, right? He had like a big injury in 2021 and a big injury that really knocked out his 23 and 24. And, you know, hindsight being 2020, maybe he should have gotten his Tommy John a year ago instead of getting it now. But I understand why you would hesitate to do so.
On a good team, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I'm not writing his career off yet. It is certainly two big injuries, but like it is only those two. It doesn't feel like Steven Strasburg, you know, to bring it back here for a second. Like it doesn't feel like that quite yet. It could, maybe it will, right? Maybe he's going to be the pitching Byron Buxton. But for now it is, you know, the elbow injury that became Tommy John and they waited too long on, subcapularis strain, which I don't actually know what that is.
Neither do I. This is not that type of podcast.
No, it is a shoulder muscle. Ooh, okay. So it's a shoulder. It's a shoulder and an elbow injury. So that's not great.
Right.
But 2022 was after the shoulder injury, right? And 2022 was good. So, you know, I think he recovered enough from the shoulder injury. Is he going to recover from the elbow injury? We'll see.
Yeah.
The fact that neither of us knows what subcapularis is means it's not a common shoulder injury. So it's not like it's not like thoracic outlet or something. So it's like it's something different that might have just been like not because of pitching. I mean, obviously it's because of pitching because it's an unnatural motion and you're throwing 100 miles an hour.
and we're only doing it every 6 days instead of building up our bodies over time of doing it every single day to where it's more normal, more possible.
Well, that's a whole question.
Yes. I kind of skipped ahead, but still.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and so like, you know, bringing up pitcher injury, Spencer Strider as well has ligament damage in his right elbow, which obviously everybody is hoping is not Tommy John surgery, is not a tear. He is going to be evaluated by Dr. Keith Meister at a date yet to be determined, according to the Braves, but theoretically soon. It is a quote-unquote UCL sprain that has landed him on the injured list. Look, I'm not a gambler, but if you can find a betting line on Spencer Strider getting Tommy John surgery, you should take that line. not to make too much light of it here, but it feels inevitable. And like, and was it you or somebody else in our chat who was like, maybe they'll do essentially the Bieber thing of shutting him down for a year and then bringing him back and immediately I might have been Pat, actually.
Yeah, that sounds like Pat. Because yeah. It does, because it was something I was about to say, like, hey, wait a second, I can make connection here.
Yeah. Like,
this is something that teams will try and do.
Yeah, but it just feels like it's so early in this season. There's no way Strider's going to pitch for the 2024 Braves. Maybe. There's like an outside shot he pitched for the 2024 Braves, but I don't think so. I think I had him in a fantasy league. I should double check. That's not good. So I think, like, you know, if you're the Braves, I get, obviously depending on what Meister says, right? Depending on what the doctors say, but I think if you can get him the Tommy John now, you kind of get him the Tommy John now. I sure do have him in the R Cardinals league. I have so many pitches on the IL already, and I'm adding Spencer Strider on top of this.
Well, did you see the whatever league Dylan's in, where he has like 7 starters and they all have famous injuries recently, and it's like Perez and Strider, and I mean, just run the gamut here, and he's like, oh, I'm doing really good at fantasy, guys.
I mean, not to make this a fantasy podcast, but I do have Eduardo Rodriguez, Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, Kodai Senga, Joan Duran, and Spencer Strider, and also Luis Robert. So
there you go.
I'm going through it in this league. I did win my week though somehow. No, sorry, I did not win my week in this league. I won my week in a different league. It's fine. It'll be fine. Everything. Most of these guys are coming back soon. But a lot of them are coming back. Like some of them, Cole, I knew was not coming back, and I was holding on to him to like keep for a year. But like, there is a lot of like, oof, I just didn't realize some of these guys were injured. So like when I drafted them, that I was like, okay, I guess I'm selling the first like 3 weeks of the season and hoping it works out on the back end.
Yep.
So, oops.
Yep. I will give a take that I'm not sure I totally believe, but I said to Jostle Dylan, it worked, by the way. I said some Atlanta fan that we know was talking about who is the worst pitcher in baseball to make like a college baseball versus MLB, the gulf between comp. And I said, listen, don't worry. Spencer Strider is not going to be the worst pitcher in baseball until at least 2028 when he's on the Mariners. Like,
was it Strider that they were comparing to Julio Teheran? I think it was Strider who they were comparing to Julio Teheran, who was like I don't know. Like I was saying this too, is you know, that like it really feels like a lot of pitchers are just like hitting the Tim Lincecum mold of like, they're just going to show up and be super dominant for like 5 years and then not be able to pitch because they destroyed their arm.
Yes.
And Lincecum got a couple of Cy Youngs out of it. I don't know if anybody else is going to make that work. You know, like that's like, if you look at Lincecum's career, like it is 5 years of absolute dominance and then complete nothing because he just couldn't do the motion anymore.
Couldn't lift his arms.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see quite a bit of that. You know, Julio Teheran had like 3 good years with, you know, a couple of mediocre years mixed in there. And then again, you know, similarly just kind of falls apart and I think might still be in baseball. I think he's, I don't know what team he'd be with right now, but
let me check
for the Brewers last year. He pitched in the Mexican League in 2022. He pitched for the Brewers last year, but it looks like he didn't have any. He doesn't have anything on Baseball Reference for this year, so I don't know if he's.
It's interesting. Oh wait, I got it. On April 5th, Teheran signed a 1-year, $2.5 million contract with the Mets.
The Mets. That's 2 days ago. Okay.
Yep.
Oh yeah, so he signed a minor league deal with the Orioles and opted out and released because he didn't make the opening day roster, and then the Mets gave him $2.5 million. Oh boy.
The Mets are in it.
Oh, hold on. I just said I have Senga in a fantasy league. Do they think he's not coming back soon? They had an injury to Tyler McGill as well. So like, I get sort of where they're at, but $2.5 million in this game is okay to give to a Julio Teheran to make some, you know, some starts, but yikes.
Not right. Yeah.
Because they also, I mean, I guess Teheran did pitch spring training already, so he's probably prepped. They might need to give him like a single start in AAA before putting him into the majors. It's not a Jordan Montgomery situation where he didn't have a spring, and so he's having an extended spring right now.
Oh, that just sucks. Like, extended spring must suck.
Yeah.
Like, I know you're holding out for it and go for it, but like, and it's more the owner's fault than the players, although I think the agents are number two there, but like, extended spring gotta suck.
Like, hey, we can have a whole Boris conversation, but that's for another time.
Right.
Let's move on to another pitcher who's doing well. Ronald Blanco, a 30-year-old journeyman, managed to throw a no-hitter against the Toronto Blue Jays on April 1st. No fools here. He threw the first no-hitter of the 2024 MLB season. It is the eighth start of his career, the 17th no-hitter in Astros history, the 10th thrown by a Dominican pitcher. And he also started his next start with another 5 no-hit innings. So 14 no-hit innings to start the season for a dude who, was signed with the Astros when he was 22 as a minor league free agent, and then just hung out in the minors for, 8 years until like getting a couple cups of coffee for the Astros as well.
Yes. And it's,
also, he just had a second kid last month.
That's what it is. So in the preseason game that the Astros played against the Sugarland team, their AAA team, they do
the Space Cowboys, right?
Yes.
I always want to say Skeeters, but it's not the Skeeters anymore.
They'll always be the Skeeters in my heart.
I know. The Space Cowboys didn't have Tracy McGrady. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. Or Scott Kazmir. Kazmir was Skeeter, I think. Oh, yeah. Anyway, he goes on the mound to face Sugarland, which, I know. He got like 10 strikeouts. He found out his second son was born, and he made the team. And then he goes from that like high immediately to throwing a no-hitter, and then almost throwing another no-hitter. Like, that's what a fortnight for Ronel Blanco. Like, I'm excited. I hope it's not just a flash in the pan here, even if it's the Astros.
Let's be honest here. He's going to be in a list with Dallas Braden and Phillip Umber. Although I guess those are perfect games, but you know what I mean? Like, it's going to be like, one of those kinds of no hitters. But like, still, you can't take that away from him. Like, it's great for him. He's going to always have that, but it's definitely going to be one of those, like, in 3 years, it's going to be 1% on an immaculate grid.
Right. And he might even get bumped from the rotation because Verlander was in Sugarland. Today's Sunday, Verlander was in Sugarland rehabbing. So I think he's going to bump someone out of the rotation,
Right.
So that would kind of suck to like be fighting for your life in the bigs and do this and like still be like, am I going to make it? I mean, hopefully not. I'm sure the Astros can find someone at the bottom of their roster to get rid of before this guy.
I'm sure he'll stay on the roster. Is he going to stay in the rotation? Is it, I think, a actual question, or do they, move him out to the bullpen and, use him as kind of a swing man like they kind of did last year? Like, I could buy that, it's within reason, but you'll never be able to take his no hitter away from him. And that's what's important. Yeah.
I would like to pause this and go on a slightly different tangent here. So Justin Verlander pitched a rehab game today against the Aviators of Las Vegas. His pitching line: 3 innings, 7 hits, 7 runs, 6 earned runs, a walk, 6 strikeouts, and he gave up a home run to Muncy. I think it's Max Muncy here. Yeah,
like the other one. Yeah,
the other Max Muncy with the same middle name, the same middle initial. Like, that's. What is going get or no, it was off Carlo Perez, who's actually a major leaguer. So that's a weird game here. The Aviators lineup is a lot of A's players who they're like, we signed bad regulars, let you try and beat them, like leapfrog them, so you're not just getting a free reign into the big leagues for you to fall upward, I guess. But I just found one more fun thing about the box score here. Forrest Willie came on in relief of Verlander. Forrest Whitley is still knocking around, and he's only 26.
I thought he was in the majors.
Has he ever made it to the majors?
Yeah, I think he has, hasn't he?
I can't answer that with confidence.
I think you're right. I think he hasn't made it to the majors. I thought he had.
It feels like he had for like even a cup of coffee, but
yeah. Well, maybe he'll be the next Ronald Blanco.
Oh, poor guy. Just get that guy some Adderall. Like that's one of those Adderall prescription away, man.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's before we finally get to our sort of meat topic here, which this episode has gone longer than we intended, but that's fine. I do want to mention another sort of story came out. We've obviously been talking quite a bit about the Fanatics Jersey Gate here, another update came out this year. The Cardinals and Twins both are going to be without one of their alternate jerseys. The Cardinals without their Victory Blues, which they wear on their Saturday road games. The Twins without their Twin Cities jersey. I'm not sure when they wear that one. But essentially, Fanatics cannot manufacture them. It is a home cream, so I don't know. They definitely certainly wear them on some home games. But yeah, Fanatics, they don't have enough made, and they can't get them to teams yet. The Cardinals one, they specifically said until June. The Twins, I'm not sure if there is a specific date. But yeah, you can still buy them in the team shop.
So you wear them while your favorite players can't.
Yeah, correct. Royce Lewis can't wear it, but if you would like to, Lewis can. Our Lewis can, but Royce Lewis can't. Boom, there we go. We did it. Yeah, I mean, what a mess, what a debacle. There's not much more to say about it. There is, so it does seem like everybody at this point has thrown Nike under the bus. Fanatics has thrown Nike under the bus. MLB has thrown Nike under the bus. They're all saying it is a Nike issue, not a Fanatics issue. I understand that to some degree, but Nike's been manufacturing this kind of stuff for years. Fanatics right. has not. Like, you know, like... I see how maybe the design issues are Nike things that like they built to Nike spec, but I think the production and manufacturing problems, you know, like I think the small letters and the MLB logo being lower down, which is also bad and ugly, and you know, some of those other things like the cost cutting measures, I can buy those as Nike issues, but like.
Yes.
The, you know, the material being bad, like that feels like, you know, maybe Nike gave the spec, but I would like, I don't know. I'd have to assume that in the past, Nike would give that spec and whoever was making it would be like, oh, actually, this doesn't work the way you want it to. Let's go back to the drawing board. And in this case, Fanatics didn't do that. That's my assumption. I'm not, you know, I can't say for sure that's what happened, but certainly the manufacturing delays are not Nike's fault, right? Like that is, if Fanatics are the manufacturer, then they're Fanatics' fault, right? And Fanatics bought Majestic, right? So like I don't understand. Like this factory should have been making these jerseys for decades. What is how did things change?
Well, and what changed, I don't know where the factory was, what offer country we're dealing with here, but like just it's just more supply chain squeezing that I see. Being the cause, no matter what company is involved. Now, however, it does sound a little convenient that Major Baseball and Fanatics are sticking to the same story after making a business deal and throwing Nike under it. But at the same time, I think it's the most obvious answer, which might just be Nike. I don't know.
Nike has to shoulder some of the blame here.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think all parties have to shoulder some of the blame. But I can understand why Nike has to shoulder a good chunk of that blame. And I know that I, as a person, am more likely to want to blame Fanatics because I hate Fanatics. So exactly. Like that's its own thing. So, you know, examining my own biases there, but there is like, it does seem like Nike has been producing jerseys and apparel and materials for the NBA for years and for other leagues, you know, for the NFL and for other leagues and for other things for a certain amount of time. And Fanatics has been known specifically for bad quality control and bad, you know, like bad quality, bad materials for a long time. And seems like those two things happened at the same time. That like the company that has been manufacturing things and not having these issues, and the company that has not been manufacturing things and has been having these issues, teamed up, and suddenly, like, it's Nike's fault. That's what confuses me, because I know Fanatics makes bad stuff. That's famous for it. Everybody hates Fanatics stuff. So like it is odd, you know. Like, I don't doubt that Nike has to shoulder some of the blame here, but you gotta imagine the company that's known for their bad quality and bad quality control is at least largely to blame here.
Right. This does Fanatics and a baseball partnership with Major League Baseball has very much an FTX on your shoulder pad or shoulders type of vibe, where it's like, yeah, we're gonna partner with this company, and it's an absolute disaster, and Major League Baseball just keeps churning these decisions out.
Yeah,
so it doesn't work.
And I could see Major League Baseball wanting, like, being more willing to anger Nike, or like, again, Nike can weather the storm better. I think Nike knows they can weather the storm better, so they care less about it. And Fanatics knows they can't. And Major League Baseball has a lot of strategic partnerships with Fanatics. So if I'm putting my tinfoil hat on, I could imagine, you know.
And right, and as I'll get into in my upcoming manifesto, I necessarily think that we reach for that hat too often now. I think it's a social media thing. However, it's important to note that when a bunch of insular rich people get to a room, sometimes it is the saving face in the dumbest way possible.
Yeah,
maybe. And especially in a hyper profit driven era and sport and all the way down the line. Now, however, do I hate that that take is probably on Twitter 10,000 ways and 10,000 crazier ways crazier? Yeah, I kind of do.
Right.
And I don't like associating with that. But this whole Fanatics thing, it's going to make a very good story. I just don't think we're at the end of it yet.
No. We'll see. The problem, too, is I believe that I would love to have seen the end of Fanatics, and I don't think it's coming anytime soon.
Oh, tell me about it. I mean, I know you really don't want it, and I'm just like, man, they suck.
I hate them. I like sports apparel a lot, and I hate Fanatics so much.
Yes,
I think they were gonna buy New Era, and then it didn't happen.
Good,
which, thank God, because I love baseball caps. But I don't doubt it coming down the pike. And boy, I really, it's not even the stuff they make. It's also their websites are bad and are worse than what they replaced. And God, I just hate Fanatics.
They fled the zone with excrement, chasing some sort of way to squeeze out money. And like right now it's working, I guess, in air quotes, but it just means the consumer's getting screwed over, and you, the consumer, is like getting it 10 times worse than just someone who buys a jersey every few years. I don't buy jerseys for my favorite baseball team. Again, we're doing some foreshadowing, but you know, the hats would suck. Like taking away good quality baseball hats. Oof. Jeez.
I know. Yeah. And for what it's worth, New Era has gone down over the years as well, but they're still, I think, good. And I think they're still, I think, the best. But it would be a huge bummer. I have one Fanatics hat. It is the St. Louis Blues Stanley Cup championship hat, and that's the only reason I bought it, is because it's the Blues championship hat, and I had no other option because that's the one they're the ones who made it. But I have one Blues hat because Fanatics makes the official team hats for the NHL, because they don't have a New Era contract anymore for those hats, and so I can't buy Blues hats, and I'm like, oh, I would like to buy another Blues hat, but I'm not buying a Fanatics one.
Exactly, because it's wasting your money.
Yeah.
Well, you could maybe find something weird from the 90s in a worse shape, I guess.
Oh, trust me. I have scoured eBay.
Oh, really?
Wow. I mean, like, I'm sure I can find stuff, but, like, nothing I'm willing to spend the money on.
Exactly, because it's all jacked up prices because they know these are the only good Blues hats.
Yeah, it's either jacked up prices or like I don't like the look of it. Like it's one or the other. You know, I'm a very traditional looking guy. So like,
yeah, I like the 90s stuff. This is ridiculous. Are you telling me the 90s were tacky? Or that, like, well, what? And
I know it's funny because the new era, the NHL had the new era contract up until like 7 or 8 years ago. I have a new era Blues hat, and I started buying baseball caps in 2013. So like in the last 10 years, they certainly had the contract and it went away. So I'm still holding out hope they get the contract back, honestly, because they have the contract with every other league.
So close. I hope so. I hope it doesn't, the tide shifts with you and not against you.
That's the hope. Hey, speaking of a shifting tide, let's get to it. Let's talk about it. It is time to talk about the Oakland A's or the Vegas A's or the teamless, the cityless A's plans.
It's the cityless A's.
They're still Oakland for a little bit, but
right. It's funny to note that Pat had me on for the funeral of the Oakland A's a year ago, and we're barely just now getting any clarity about what the timeline is for this, and we still have no idea.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, you know, we've talked about this for a while, and I have to admit that you were right and I was wrong, because I was being optimistic, right? I was holding out hope, being optimistic that it would be so stupid for the A's to play in Sacramento. it would be so dumb. And why would MLB want to do it? Why would they allow it? It would make so much more sense to concede to some things. Like Oakland is allowing the move. They're not, at this point, they're like, go ahead and move. Just promise us an expansion franchise. You can continue playing the Coliseum for another 3 years. And they did not take the deal. And they will be playing in Sacramento for like 3 years. And what? A crap show. I was gonna say it. What a crap show.
Yep. Right. We are keeping things clean here, even if the topic is anything but.
Oh my god.
It's so stupid. There were other things, and you know, when the city of Oakland says we wanna be first line for an expansion team, first of all, it's not the A's who have the ability to say yes to that. You know, like all 30 owners. And so that felt like a weird ask, maybe not weird, showboaty in a lot of what the Oakland City Council did. Like if they focus less on showboating and more on politics, maybe this would go differently. Same goes for the other side, times a factor of a billion. But like with the whole money and expansion team, we want to keep the name. Like you want to keep the name from a 1880s Philadelphia sports club, like what you want to keep the name. And so like I think with the expand, like again, it's all the right things to say when you're losing a team, but in this instance, especially the give us an expansion, like if any Bay Area city needs an expansion team, it's San Jose. That's how you do it. Like San Jose needs an expansion team, not necessarily Oakland should have a triple A team, I guess, but it's just rough.
It was such a weird situation. If it feels like, I mean, I don't know, maybe I don't know what happened behind closed doors. And I totally get what you're saying about what happened publicly, that how it was, very, very much, you know, saying in the media the things to get everyone, like get everyone and keep everyone on your side without potentially doing the due diligence, because you're right, they could have built Howard Terminal 8 years ago and this would never happen, right?
It
wouldn't, because MLB would not allow them to build a new stadium and then move in another 5 years, you know. So like I understand all that too, but it just felt like, I mean, the Vegas part of the proposal is still really bad. I'm still not convinced they will play in Vegas. I am convinced they will leave Oakland, but I'm still not convinced they're going to make it to Vegas. I'm convinced a team will play in Vegas. I'm not convinced it's going to be the Athletics, just because of how How messy, like how poorly they have Vegas has handled this. I don't think they're going to be ready by the time MLB wants the A's out of Sacramento.
Yes.
So like they might, you know, be like, all right, maybe we'll go back to San Jose, or maybe we'll go to Salt Lake City, or maybe like the A's are going to move. I don't know where they're going to move to, but I'm not sure it's Vegas. It's probably Vegas. It's still probably Vegas, but I feel like it's the fact that it's still in question whether or not Vegas is going to manage to make this work is, I mean, pathetic. It's pathetic.
It's, and I'm the, I'll get into a very brief outline of the history because it was a little therapeutic for me, right? But before I get into that, I will say the tiny little bias in me. The bias in me says Las Vegas fails. Just, and I'll get to this at the tail end of my rant, but the hope is that the A's never make it to Vegas. Okay, maybe there's an expansion team. I don't think we can avoid that at this point, although I wouldn't put a team there. I don't know what the Diamondbacks are going to do in 10 years because their owner said, we want to stay in Chase Field, but he has been deliberately ignoring stadium renovations on Chase Field for the last 10 years to the point where, like I mentioned on this podcast, the sinks in the public restrooms haven't changed. Like, it's just bad, ugly stuff that kind of the A's did at the Coliseum where they're like, yeah, well, we signed a 10-year lease, but we're not really going to do any work on this building. And so, and all of a sudden they're trying to, they're squirming away and trying to move. And I think Phoenix does that too. So maybe they wind up in Las Vegas. That might be more likely than an expansion team. Then finally Vegas gets their chips in a row and gets a random Diamondbacks team that's fleeing an absolute climate disaster of a heat wave in Phoenix 1 year. I don't know. But I do not, I think Salt Lake can barf up a stadium way quicker than Vegas. They've already kind of got, because they're building the minor league team out in the boonies, essentially, and they're saying we have a site for the major league team. And I do think they're gonna get a major league team at some point because it's gonna, their stadium's gonna happen fast, and then they're gonna win one of these teams that don't know where they're going, like the A's. Right. I also think Sacramento might have a really good argument for keeping them. Not good as in like you want to move your team to Sacramento, but good like, well, you know, Vegas still doesn't have their you-know-what together, and it's been 4 years in Sacramento, and the team's good-ish, and the city likes them enough. Like, you're never going to have a high-market, high-payroll team in Sacramento, but you're going to have the TV revenue around it.
And so, yeah, like, and I mean, as far, like, if they manage to stay in Sacramento, I think they get back some Oakland fans, because at least still in Northern California, you know, like, I think it's potential, like, particularly all of our friends who are Oakland fans are not sticking around. But if they stay in Sacramento, like, just by accident, I certainly think some are, yeah, at least two of them will, if not more. Yeah.
Right.
There's more than three, but yeah.
I think that there will at least be with, see, as I was studying the history of the A's trying to move, which really they've been in constant trying to move since the 50s. It really hasn't stopped. It lets up for a couple years here and there, but it really hasn't stopped. And when I was thinking about moving in the Bay Area, you didn't hear the nationwide consternation of like, how dare they? You didn't really hear that. It was like nationally, if you live in Boston and you go to see the A's, how much of a difference is it if they're the Oakland A's or the Sacramento A's?
Yeah, right.
Like, it's not. And in Northern California, I think it is to a degree, especially Sacramento, because, you know, telling fans to hop on the Capitol corridor for 90 minutes to go see an A's game, that is different if you're living in the Bay. But right. At the same time, not really. So,
yeah. I mean, like, I think people will be annoyed, but I think especially because of what, like, when it feels like a if they had said 5 years ago we're moving to Sacramento, I think they would have definitely been like, I think you know, of the people who are friends of ours who like would have been like, probably, you know, like I don't buy it, like I don't feel good about it, but. Mm-hmm. As a essentially compromise to Vegas, as a like, well, at least it's not Vegas. Like, they were gonna, you know, they will be like, all right, I'll stick with them on this, you know. especially like, you know, especially the, you know, the two who we know who live in Sacramento.
I know.
You know, like that's, those are the easiest sells, but like the two who live in the Bay, I think still might be like, well, at least I can still go see them. And like, at least they're like, you know, near my friends, and at least they're, you know, like at least they still represent us in some way.
Right.
You know, I could certainly see that. And by the way, like with the size of Sacramento, I could also see if Sacramento, like if they stay in Sacramento for like a little while, I think it's not out of the question that they come back and they're like, maybe we just move to San Jose.
I see. And I absolutely want to believe that in my heart of hearts. However, Major League Baseball, in its current leadership structure, has made it abundantly clear that they will not set the precedent of taking one team's stuff and giving it to another team, because that's socialism.
Yeah, yeah, socialism. But that's I don't think Major League Baseball's current leadership is going to last until the A's. Until the end of the A's scheduled time in Sacramento, which is, I think, what is it? It's 3 years, right?
With an option for a fourth.
So I think by that, the end of that third year, the leadership structure will be different in Major League Baseball. So it's a whole different question.
Yes. And the reason, but with Bud Selig, his thing was just, I don't want a team in Oakland. We're but Oakland. So, and remember, he got his team as a used car salesman in 1970, stealing it from, like, while they were on the bus. Yeah, like, they were on the bus after spring training trying to go somewhere, and he was like, let's just slap on some Milwaukee stuff. I'm buying the team mid-route. And, like, that sounds very, very humorous and embarrassing. That was the end of the Pilots, essentially, which is fitting end for that team. But, like, and as a kid, you think, wow, I can't believe baseball was so rudimentary, you know? Like,
yeah.
You put a team in a city for 1 year, and then they fled in disgrace. And one of the most famous books of sports in the 20th century is about how much of a disgrace they were. And now they're in Milwaukee. Like, I can't believe that. But, like, that situation is playing out in Fanatics, in a move to Sacramento, in a million different ways that nothing really changes. It's just abnormal incompetence. So, Bud Selig gets his team, and I'll start my very brief informative jaunt here in 1978. And I don't know how much of the history here matters, but I'll try and pick it up. So, and it's 78. I could have started earlier. Finley flirted like a half dozen cities out of his way out of Kansas City, like Atlanta, Dallas, New Orleans. He went there. He landed in Oakland, and I think there was immediate resentment from the older white guys who control Major League Baseball, for obvious reasons. Hint. But anyway, it's 78. Finley is aging fast. Now they're finally losing again. And so he sold the team to some dude in Denver. The American League owners approved the move. Coliseum said, hey, you signed a lease. You can't break it. But they said if the Giants played half of their games in the Coliseum and the other half in Candlestick, they'd agree. They'd wipe their hands and go. And Finley was quoted in a newspaper article saying he can't fault the guy he sold the team to. Said the Oakland people were very cooperative, but the San Francisco people have not been very cooperative.
Isn't that the story?
And he said, he was, as anyone who knows anything about Finley, he's just a thorn in everyone's side. So why would anyone bail him out, you know? Like,
yeah.
The orange baseball guy is asking for help. When a reporter asked if there was a local group interested in buying the A's, he said, no one wants to buy a club in Oakland. Why would they want to buy a license to lose? Which, again, does that not sound, I mean, there's echoes to the present day story, but it feels like the A's had a license to lose last year. So going into that 78 season, they lost 100 games. They lost 108 games the next year. They had a 600 person attendance at a game in April of 79, which is still 600? Very famous. 653.
Wow.
It was the lowest attended Major League Baseball game of the modern era. It was an April game against the Mariners. And I will tell you what, an April 1979 game against the Mariners was probably not all that different from the September 2023 game against the Mariners on a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
That I went to. So it's not, there's some echoes here of like, there, it seemed like the same situation to the point where you wonder what the 40 years in between, how they made it work. Because that's a copy of it. It seems like it's postponing the inevitable that the team needed to get out of the Coliseum as soon as possible. The Raiders were already gone by the late 70s. They had left to Los Angeles. Finley sells the team to New Orleans. That's denied. And so then he sold his second place team to Walter Haas, the Levi Strauss corporate president. He brought back the elephant as the mascot. He kind of evened things out. He won, and this A's team, of course, wins a bunch of pennants, draws huge crowds, and not coincidentally, Giants are struggling to get attendance in their toilet bowl stadium, so they tried to move to Tampa Bay. The A's owner gives up a piece of his TV rights in Santa Clara County to entice the Giants to stay. The move gets denied. There's a lot of work to keep the Bay a two-team baseball area. But we go to some spoiled rich kid who's already a failed businessman, by the way, named John. He convinced his father to help establish a group of local investors to buy the Giants. So this insulting investment consortium blew up a lot of words there. Consortium. They bought the Giants. The Giants signed Barry Bonds. They build a new stadium. The A's owner, who put his own money into the team, died in 95, and the team is bought by Margie Schott's third cousin, like the Reds owner, the Nazi loving Reds owner. Her third cousin buys the team with some real estate developers, and these are the comic cheap owners you remember from Moneyball. The dudes who think of the famous scene in Close Your Eye, and that's
Steve Schott, right? Yeah.
Yes. Those owners sell the team to Lewis Wolf and his friend John, the guy who I was talking, the spoiled rich kid who I was talking about earlier, John. So they buy the A's in 2005. And so John Fisher has to sell his stake in the Giants because his father co-owned Giants, and so did he, sort of. He had a small stake, so he had to sell the Giants to be the A's owner. But the whole point is that he tried to keep the team in the Bay, and it worked. And now they have Bonds, and now they're winning all these rings. Or, well, not yet with the rings, but... I'm going to speed run this next part because the more you get bogged down in the particulars, the more depressing all forms of business and government practice becomes. So back in the cheap days, the A's tried to move to downtown Oakland. Mayor Jerry Brown, no, not governor, Mayor Jerry Brown said no. Stop for a moment and laugh, because after he went governor. I hopped into this saga in 2006 when Cisco Field is announced by the new owner, Wolf. You remember Cisco Field?
Vaguely.
Okay. All right. That's about all it needed to be. It looks pretty nice. If you can look up the designs, the renderings look more reasonable than the current Vegas ones. I'll say that. It looked like Petco, which is pretty good to copy. It's located in Fremont, which is like 20 minutes south of Oakland, which, I think if the A's moved to Fremont, all of our A's fan friends would roll their eyes, but not necessarily change anything.
Yeah.
So they bought the land from Cisco. They were getting the stadium after them. It's going to cost like $400 million. Wasn't really near a BART station. The NIMBYs got into it. But again, the other sites they considered didn't look that good either, like Howard Terminal. So a month after losing in the LCS, tragically, the A's announced they're going to build a new stadium and have it open by 2012. I think the Great Recession really killed it. I didn't read any sources that said that was the reason, but like, you're going to spend a bunch of money in 2007. I wonder how that went. You know, Park doesn't happen. Worst commissioner in baseball history, and Lewis Wolf's fraternity brother, Bud Selig, in case you're wondering how insular this group is, is in charge. Also, their fraternity brother, some Wikipedia, it's like on the front description for Wolf, was also Herb Cole, was in their fraternity, which sounds also very weird that the senator, the Coles guy. Anyway,
yeah.
So Selig's always loathed that there's a team in Oakland. It goes back to those days when all the stuffy white dudes were like, Oakland, no. So the odds have always been against Oakland to even have a team. And to have a team this long, it's pretty amazing. So all of a sudden, it's 2012, and after years of painful mediocrity, the A's are fun again and are trying to open Cisco Field. Which, again, you kind of timed the stadium opening with a good team here. Except you didn't, because they're still in the Coliseum. So Cisco Field in San Jose the site looks perfect. There's public transportation, but San Jose is in Santa Clara County. They gave up that chunk to the Giants. Here's where the Giants start boxing the A's out of San Jose for local media coverage and then winning three stupid rings. They're stupid rings, by the way, not just rings. So they want to be the only good team in town. And they almost certainly their wish here. I met Lou Wolf very briefly in game 161 of the 2014 season, and he seemed oddly down to earth for someone really rich. He was like, whatever. Like, he was not grumpy, but just like talking to him, I was like, okay, I don't have to talk to someone who has $1 billion. Like, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And I don't know how wealthy he is, but his Wikipedia page is oddly flattering. When I was doing the backup research for this, I was like, man, they make this guy look good. That's weird. After another nightmare playoff loss, he signed a 10-year deal to stay in the Coliseum. Because no matter what, the A's are staying in the Bay, he says. And then he leaves his managing part and gives it to John. The next few years were all focused on Oakland. The A's did a lot of unique and creative tie-ins to the city, to marketing. When it came for looking for a stadium, they weren't going anywhere. They weren't making any progress. The Laney College site was a bust. The Howard Terminal site, which had been studied like two decades before, needed a lot of infrastructure fixes. The A's were focused on building the stadium with their own money because oceanfront development in the Bay is going to make you stupid rich if you're already stupid rich. But the site contained a toxic waste dump. The only BART station involved crossing like a half mile train yard. Basically, the mayor felt like she had to keep the A's because she had lost two sports teams, Libby Schaff, the mayor of Oakland, and she's going to be running to replace Newsom. Or, like, it's California politics. It seems like everyone from the city council level up is trying to say the right things to climb the ladder, because I'm not going to say it's a one state, one party state, but it kind of is. It is in places, at least the governor. So she can't lose the A's. But the port doesn't want to fix the site. They don't want to clean up the toxic waste dump. They fund opposition like crazy. But when the A's got the non-binding agreement to build Howard Terminal and the environmental review passed, I really thought, okay, there's like 80% chance this is going to happen. And immediately they try and up the ante and say, okay, we're also going to do something in Vegas. And then Oakland's like, nah, we're not talking to you ever again. Which I get, but like, they didn't have any idea for Vegas. They were just saying dumb stuff for PR.
And hey, they still don't.
They still don't. They have no idea.
it's
They have no, and like, the whole retractable roof thing made me laugh, where they're like, we're going to build a retractable roof. And I think they said that, and then a reporter was like, you know, your site is like the size of the roof, not just the size. Like, no retractable roof will fit in that acreage. And they're like, we're going to build a dome. Like, are you kidding me? So anyway, that's just another dumb thing. It's an even dumber thing onto this already dumb saga. But this is to I'll briefly go into a normal timeline. Let's go back to the normal timeline here. And what is the normal timeline, you're asking? There's still miserable things in the timeline. There's famine, there's genocide, rainy days and Mondays.
Jesus.
But yes. This century, but in the normal timeline, the presidents in this century have been Gore, McCain, Obama, Kane, Nikki Haley, and then we're having an election and the incumbent Nikki Haley is really unpopular. There you go.
I do not think it's Nikki Haley. I understand. I will buy that it's a Republican. I don't think it's Nikki Haley.
See, what's the first Republican that comes to mind? This isn't politics, though, but like
Jeb.
Okay, Jeb. I'll give you Jeb. That's fair.
Jeb. Sorry.
Jeb. So it's just popular vote style, you know. So in the normal timeline, the A's bought the site that is now the Google headquarters in San Jose. After the A's didn't get it, Google built their headquarters. So they get the Google headquarters site. They move in by 2019. They built a new stadium with a blandly higher payroll by like $10 more million. They go LCS exit, wildcard loss. Still nothing like dynasty level, but like they're consistently up there losing to Houston. And then all of a sudden this year, I'm joining the podcast to talk about Matt Olson hitting 50 home runs on a fourth place team, like I've said. So that's the San Jose A's experience. They're still not good, but they have Matt Olson. Again, they're still not good. But they'll run a higher payroll by like just enough when they're good, but otherwise not. There isn't any baseball-wide outcry for the A's moving to San Jose because, meh, they're still in the Bay. The focus isn't on A's fans, but Oakland fans, because if the A's had gone to San Jose, the Warriors had gone to San Francisco, and then the Raiders go to Vegas, where's all the loathing? And it's the Raiders. They're a racist organization. They suck. No one likes the Raiders. So, anyway, and it's not the A's necessarily with the holding the bag. So, right. That's the normal timeline of things that I would imagine. And that's, maybe we get back to the normal timeline. And maybe the Sacramento A's just go to San Jose in a couple of years just because baseball is so sick of this happening and they need expansion more than need to take one thing from one team. Because this is, they're rushing the A's thing because of expanding. So they can't expand yet. And yet, with this whole Las Vegas thing, they need to expand like 10 years ago, not wait for the A's to figure it out in Sacramento. Like, no. But they can't. So I really.
And for what it's worth.
Situation.
Yeah. For what it's worth, my hot take is if they move to Vegas successfully, then I think it's different, which I'm not sure it'll happen. If they don't move to Vegas successfully and they move to, you know, they stay in Sacramento or they move to San Jose or they move to Salt Lake City or whatever, one of these other spots, and they expand in Vegas, which is likely, you know, assuming they don't make it to Vegas successfully, they will expand in Vegas. I don't think that expansion team does well enough attendance wise or anything wise to stick in Vegas for more than 20 years. And I think 20 years is like a long timetable. I think it might be even be 10 years, but I think it's tough to give up after 10 years for an organization like MLB. But I think Vegas just is not like, I think they're looking at the success of the Golden Knights and being like, oh, we can, you know, make that happen. But I don't think baseball in Las Vegas for the major leagues is going to work the way that they want it to work. And it's going to work so poorly that that team's going to have to move anyway.
I think that team has a max 30-year lifespan. Max.
Yeah, something like that. I think we're saying long timetables because you kind of have to give them some room, but I feel like it's 15 to 20. But yes.
Oh yeah, no. And it's not like, that's why I'm rooting for the A's not to go to Vegas, because then they just get stuck in this again in 30 years. And I feel like with Vegas, they're already kind of building their agreement to where it's going to be harder for their stadium authority to let go of you, because they kind of know that, like, the moment the Raiders stadium even looks a little bit crappy, you know they're going to start entertaining offers to move, because they've done this every 20 years. And so they got to keep the Raiders. The Golden Knights, I think they're going to be successful as a novelty till the end of Las Vegas. Like, you can't use that model for other sports and say this will work. Like, you're trying.
I think the Knights work. The Knights worked in a certain way because, we talked to Mitsula about this on the podcast. I think last year, that might have been 2 years ago, but I think it was last year. This saga has been going on so long, who even knows anymore?
Yes.
But the Knights, the reason the Knights worked in a certain way is because nobody in Vegas was already a hockey fan, and so everybody in Vegas got around the Knights. Like they all rallied around the team, whereas the Raiders have not worked as well because everybody in Vegas already had their football team, and some of them that happens to be the Raiders, but for the most part everybody already had their team, and so nobody's like suddenly like, oh, I'm going to be a Raiders fan. They're going to be like, oh, I'll go see the Raiders when my team's in town.
Make a vacation around going to see when my team plays in the Raiders.
Yeah, exactly. And baseball is even more insular than that, than football is. So I think it has the exact same issue, except it has 10 times as many games as football. So you're sitting out there, like, it's on a weekday, you're sitting out there in the beating sun, maybe you get a dome, but if you don't, then oof, what a nightmare. You know, it just, it doesn't seem like there's any way that baseball in Vegas works. I can see basketball in Vegas working, which I know they really want that as well. And that's my one actually hope, silver lining I take from the potential of the A's moving to Vegas is that it's going to be such a failure that the NBA is going to be like, maybe we shouldn't do this, and St. Louis gets an expansion team.
That would kind of work. No, that's not bad. I'll take that.
I think St. Louis should be near the top of the list for an expansion team. I've made a whole TikTok about this.
And you would jump onto that team's bandwagon and leave the Pacers behind? Question mark.
It's tough. Well, I think a St. Louis team would be in the West, so I'd have an East team and a West team is what'll likely happen.
Okay.
I don't think I can leave the Pacers behind. I don't think I can do that.
Good.
I've been a Pacers fan longer than I've been a Cardinals fan.
Yes, remember that.
So, like, it's. I don't think I could leave them behind. I think logically a St. Louis team would be in the West, and I'd be a fan of two teams, East and West. But it is. It's a question I've had in the past: is what would I do? What would happen? They would certainly be my second team from the get-go, no matter what. Would they ever overtake? Who knows? But that's my sort of silver lining hope is that Vegas A's prove that Vegas can't handle three teams, and so the NBA doesn't decide to expand there. But I don't think that's likely. In fact, I think the NBA is in Vegas before the A's are.
I do think the NBA will expand before baseball will. Not necessarily beating the A's, but they'll expand before baseball does. And baseball is not as savvy as the other leagues to know that if you go to a market with its own identity but no sport teams, even if it's smaller, probably can latch on easier than if you follow the other teams to Nashville 20 years after they did.
Right.
And that's why I'm not sold on Nashville. I think Nashville should the Rays anyway, because people are going to be moving to Nashville for the next 30 years from places out west. So Nashville might make sense, but still it's that whole you're already a Titans or you're already a football town and baseball is going to be added onto it. No, you need to send baseball out to where there is no one else. I guess Sacramento, not really, but there's only the Kings. Right. I will say, to as sort of a my silver lining, I think, is that if with two baseball teams in one city, you know, that was how football worked with the American League challenging the National League in 1903, and then the Federal League coming in and challenging them. Like, but that was back when we had competition, and then the Supreme Court said, you know, baseball has a monopoly. You can't challenge them. Just made everything worse. But I think that it seems like with New York excluded, we're shying away from two teams in one city or one area. So if you like move the Angels to Salt Lake, move the A's to Sacramento, San Jose, move the White Sox to remote Chicagoland, I guess. You know what that looks like more than me. Maybe Nashville.
Arlington Heights potentially is where the Bears have been talking about moving.
Okay. Right. So that might be the financial way forward in even the normal universe. I don't know completely. I think cities can host two baseball teams, but you need to fix the population densities of our cities. Like, don't let me operate a dang car in a downtown area. Make alternative transport so mediocre and meh that neighborhoods regain texture. So then you have major league caliber cities and hardier markets. So baseball is clearly the best when you're playing proximate geographic rivals all the time. And if that's in your same city, yes.
Frack, I agree with you. And I think if we get on this, exit, we're going to be on it for another hour. So I think because I agree with you, and I would love to commiserate with you about this, but I think we have to we have to rein ourselves in.
That's a preview for another time.
Yeah, for sure. That's our podcast about city planning, which we'll have a whole.
Yep.
We're so on the same page here. We can't do this.
I'm glad. I knew we would be. That's why I wanted to throw that in there at the end. Not Moneyball anymore. It's McKinsey Ball.
Yeah. That's going to do it for us here, though. We are going to, I'm going to talk about to Pat first in a little bit. But first, Frack, thanks so much for joining for this episode. It did go longer than planned, but that's always going to happen with you.
Right. Yep. That's who I am. But
especially with you. And then also, like, I mean, me or Dylan, we're both pretty bad at like reining people in.
It's a skill.
I've told you the episode that I did the most editing on was your episode of the Division Dandies, which I peel behind the curtain a little bit for folks. That would be the longest episode ever of this podcast if the whole thing wasn't set to 95% speed or 90% speed or something like that. I literally sped the whole episode up because I was like, this is so long. I can't allow this to be this long. So the whole thing is shrunk to 90% speed. So not the longest episode ever of the podcast.
Oh my goodness. That is a title I will wear with pride.
Dylan, and that's after Dylan didn't allow you to talk about the Tacoma Rainiers AAA bullpen.
He censored me.
He was right to do it. All right. We're going to cut now to Pat and Pat and me talking about the Phillies City Connect jerseys. So stay tuned for that. Welcome back, folks. I'm here now with Pat to talk a little bit about the Phillies City Connect jerseys. Pat, how you doing?
Pretty good. It's Friday night. We're recording this in the past because I will either be watching or I'll actually be at WrestleMania in Philly when we were going to record. So.
Yeah.
And
it is City Connect Day. The City Connects were, they were launched today, this morning. They've been, around for a few weeks now. At least a few days. So I guess let's go a little chronologically. I'm sure you saw the leaks. What did you think when you saw the leaks?
So when I saw the leaks, this is extremely fun of your reaction to these. These were revealed at 10 o'clock today in the morning. At 10:25, we had an earthquake. So that's kind of how Mother Nature felt about these. But when I saw the initial leaks, I thought they were cool, but I wasn't sure how it was going to work. I personally wanted a Fanatic themed jersey.
Right.
I thought that was the way they had to go with the City Connects, because like what connects more with the Phillies and the city than the Fanatic? Like the Fanatic is the most beloved mascot in the city. Well, probably was. I think Gritty might be a little bit ahead at this point.
I think Gritty's above the Fanatic now. Yeah, Gritty came in hot and heavy.
Yeah, I think Gritty might be above the Fanatic now, but certainly he's the most beloved mascot in baseball. And I thought, okay, Fanatic green jerseys would be awesome. Or they were going to go some like maroon jersey because they had the maroon jerseys back in the 80s, which paired nicely with the powder blues. I was like, okay, that would be cool to go with, to go back in time to that. And there was even like an outside chance that they play like tribute to the Philadelphia A's. But what they went with instead, the light blue going to the dark blue and the lightning yellow color, you know, when I saw it originally, I was like, I'm going to get one, but like, I don't know how I feel about it, but that was just a leak. So now that they've been officially unveiled and I can see the full getup, I love them. I think they're great. They speak to what the city, it's City Connect, and it connects to the city in the best ways possible, looking at what they put out here on their site. So I can get into that if you want to get your thoughts out on them first.
Yeah, well, so I'll say this, right? I'm a big uniform head. I think I care more about sports uniforms than the average sports enjoyer does. People might remember, especially if you came over from our baseball, if you've been part of the our baseball community for many years, many years ago during one of the our baseball symposiums, I wrote a piece about how colored tops have no place in Major League Baseball, particularly like, yeah, bright colors. I think there's very, very few exceptions. I think the Pirates' yellows and black pants work. I think some of the A's green jerseys work. But number one, the top should match the pants. And number two, the pants should never be dark. These are dark pants. Don't love them. I do like the yellow piping. The big thing this gets away with is I think there's not enough blue and gold in professional sports. I'm a Pacers fan. We're blue and gold. The Brewers have blue and gold. Or, you know, whatever you want to call this yellow, blue and yellow, blue and gold, whatever. I think there could stand to be more of it, and I do like that part of it. One thing I do like about one thing, I like that this is a big swing, right? The worst City Connects are the ones that are the smallest swings that are like, this is just an alt jersey that is also ugly.
Looking at the Dodgers jerseys.
So I like that this. Yeah, yeah. I'll call the Dodgers jersey. The Dodgers jerseys are bad. The Giants ones are bad.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, like those are kind of like among the worst ones. There's other bad ones that are, you know, that did take a big swing, but like I actually like about this that nothing about it screams Philadelphia Phillies, right? It doesn't seem like a Philadelphia Phillies jersey, but it does seem to speak to Philadelphia.
Yes.
Which is cool. Like that's a cool way of approaching the concept. I like the hat. The hat rocks.
Is amazing.
Like that, I have nothing bad to say about the hat.
That's what I was wing on to the jersey. Yeah. The hat's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I have nothing negative to say about the hat. I think it's sick. And the sleeve patch is pretty cool too. And I like the socks. But I like that it says Philly across the front, right? Because like it's interesting. Like the Phillies are such like an interesting team where like they are the Philadelphians, right? It's such like a weird thing. Like even like, you know, like New York, like the Mets are like the New York Metropolitans, which is also kind of the same thing, but it's not like They're not the New York New Yorkers, right? But the Phillies are the Philly Phillies. it's the closest thing is Los Angeles de Los Angeles, which is what the Angels should do when they do their next City Connects.
Yeah.
They gotta do the Angels of the Angels. But I like that it's Philly, and like that says both things that you need it to say. But in many ways, like a lot of these, it kind of looks like, you know, like back in the day when like you would buy, you still can do that kind of stuff like at Walmart or whatever, where like they didn't get like the official licensed stuff, but they kind of made like a fakey licensed version of it. It still just like kind of shouts that I think gradients suck. Although what's interesting is I think if it was just navy the whole way with the like contrasting light blue stitching, that would be sick.
Yeah.
Because the contrasting light blue stitching against the navy on the bottom of it, because I'm looking at this picture of Harper on the Phillies website, that looks really cool. But then it comes into the gradient where it's light blue on light blue, and it's like, okay, whatever. But overall, at least they made a swing. But I can't be in love with it. And then, you know, we can talk about the Trey Turner 7, but let's get your like full thoughts first.
Yeah. So like this really, it connects with the city. So we start with the coloring,
And by the way, yeah, Philadelphia's flag sucks, but the colors are the flag of Philadelphia, which is cool.
Yeah, blue and yellow, the flag of Philadelphia, which has been unchanged since its inception. And like this is what's interesting that the site put out.
Which again, to be fair, it's been unchanged since its inception, which is a bad thing. It should have been changed.
The from light to dark, Philly has always been a place unafraid to revolutionize, start anew, and work hard to make change, which is kind of what the jersey does here. It starts light and then it goes dark, which is really interesting nod to what Philadelphia has done. The writing on the front, the Philly script, references what writing side is used to write the Independence. And then if you look, if you look at the script, you'll see cracks in it, a reference to the Liberty Bell. The inside collar features the Philadelphia skyline, which is very nice. Cap, the Liberty Bell, of course. But if you look under the bill of the cap, you will see love written and the Philadelphia skyline all around the bill of it, which is really neat. And the Liberty Bell itself has this Philadelphia skyline in it. I think the hat is the coolest part of this whole uniform.
Like I said, nothing negative to say about the hat. The hat is super sick.
The helmets have a nice matte finish to them, which is really
which
nice.
Which is the first time Philadelphia's ever, the first time Philadelphia's ever used a matte finish on their helmets.
Yep. You have the brotherly love sleeve with the Liberty Bell representing the O.
Yep.
Very nice. Love that. The socks are incredible. The yellow lettering on the back, I really like. And the numbers, you know, the 7 for Trey Turner looks like the Riddler. It's just a question mark, which is extremely funny. The pants with the yellow piping.
The numbers are super goofy. Like even the NOLA 27, I think, is super goofy. Like the 2 on it is like like the Harper 3, I think, works. But like it's just it, I don't know what this font is. Well, like Alvarado 46, I think it looks actually fine. I'm looking down different players here, but I don't know what this number font is and why they chose to go with it.
Yeah, it's a very interesting font for the numbers. They made an attempt. You know,
I get what they were doing with the Philly, and I get that. Yeah. I can rock with it, but boy, that number font is really something.
Yeah. It's boy, it's something. But I like them. I'm definitely gonna get one. Here's my issue with X and MLB Shop in general. Why can't you have 4X when you put these things out? I was gonna buy one today. I was either gonna get a Harper or a Wheeler jersey. I own a Harper jersey, but you can't have too many. I don't own a Wheeler jersey, so I really wanted to get a Wheeler one. And they had no 4Xs. So, if MLB could figure that out, you know, us tall people, we deserve to wear clothing too.
They might have them in the, like, in the team shops when they drop there.
I'm looking at the team shop right now and they don't have it.
No, I mean, like, in the physical team shop. Like, when you actually go to a store.
They probably do, but that means I got to go down. Well, maybe I can check.
You'll go down eventually.
Sunday.
Yeah.
So, Sunday, if I'm going to be in Philly for WrestleMania, I can check there.
Or even, like, potentially at a local Dick's Sporting Goods or whatever. Like, sometimes those places will have stuff like that.
Well, here's the thing. The Lehigh Valley doesn't sell Philly stuff. Because where I am is so close to New Jersey, it's Mets and Yankee stuff. Like, I literally live 5 minutes from the New Jersey border, and it's closer to New York than it is Philly.
Hmm.
So, like, Philly is an hour and a half for me. New York's only an hour.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to Central Illinois. You can get Cubs and Cardinals stuff there.
That's very... Yeah, I've checked the Dick's here before for Philly stuff. You know, maybe the malls will have it eventually, but then I'm overpaying at the mall and they usually never have 4X, so.
Yeah, I guess try when you're in Philly to see if they...
It's a problem with being tall.
Have it at the team store.
Yeah. And large. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like them. They look good. Definitely not the best of the City Connect jerseys that have been released overall. But I'm happy with it. It's, you know, one that I can wear proudly. You know, here's the thing. I like the out there kind of stuff. Like when New Era was doing all those weird hats, I thought they were cool. Like, I always like the stuff that's way out there.
Yeah, I very much don't. So that's
you're a traditionalist.
I'm a super traditionalist. Yeah. Yes, you know, like, and as a Cardinals fan, right? Cardinals have been very traditional with, and the Cardinals getting the City Connect this year too. So we'll see.
I'm interested to see what those look like. The arch is going to be on it. You got to know the arch is going to be on.
Yeah, yeah, and I imagine it's going to be red, and it'll be the first time the Cardinals wear red on the field in the regular season, like outside of, you know, like some weird super special thing like Players Weekend or whatever. So like I will be interested to see what they end up doing.
But look, like a McDonald's jersey.
I'm gonna have Big Mac land, so the Cardinals for a long time were super resistant to even having any alternate jerseys. And now they do have the Saturday alternates, which are the home alt, right. But the home alt is cream and the road alt is, you know, the baby blue. So they still like are traditional style jerseys, even if they're not, you know, even if they are alternates. So
I thought your cream jerseys didn't come in because Fanatics screwed up.
No, the creams did. The Victory Blues didn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which I'm sure we talked about in the segment because, oh boy.
That's so bad. I can't stand Fanatics and what they've done.
I know. We could do a whole other segment on that. But I will say is I think with City Connects, the thing that's important is that they resonate with the city and that they resonate with the fans, right? So like the Boston ones, because those were I think Boston was the first.
Yeah, so Boston was marathon themed.
Yeah, they were marathon themed, and like, and I thought they were super goofy, and everyone in Boston loves them. Like, and my cousins, like, I have cousins. Most of my cousins live in Boston, or like are, you know, fans of Boston teams, and they like are super into them. Like, Boston people love the Boston City Connects. I'm like, all right,
That seems to be the general reaction online right now. It's like Phillies fans, when these leaked, were very against it. And now that the full getup has been revealed, it seems like everyone's for it. And they did a good job at selling it. Just selling how it connects to the city. And, you know, I think it also helps, like, you know, you see Bryce Harper wearing this, you're going to like it. You know, it helps that, like, the Phillies probably have the hottest team in baseball in terms of players. Like, you see Harper and Castellanos wearing these, you're going to want to get them.
I just saw the underbrim. I was looking for this for a while.
The underbrim is so cool.
Like I said, even at the top, nothing negative to say about the hats. The hat
is a home run. Home run.
The hat, I think, is in my opinion, the only win here. But the rest of them are okay, I guess. The rest of it's fine. Cool. Well, Pat, thanks for joining and chatting about the City Connects. And
thanks for having me. And go Cody Rhodes.
There we go. And I guess we'll kick it here to the outro. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of Rain Delay Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. Rain Delay Radio is executive produced by Lewis. My name is Nam. I hosted this whole episode. I also edited this whole episode. I was joined in our intro and A's segment, quote unquote, by Frack. And I was joined to talk about the Phillies City Connect jerseys by Pat. Rain Delay Radio releases every Monday morning at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, or sometimes 1 a.m. Central Time, or sometimes 1 a.m. Mountain Time. And our theme was composed by Chuck Lease. We will talk to you next week. Bye.